Hi, podcasters. Welcome to my show. My name's Kathy Cassidy, and I'm a clinical forensic therapist. By the way, I can't think of the right title for my show, and I keep changing it because I want it to reflect different things, and I feel like the title is boxing me in. So, anyways, today I want to tell you about a true crime story about the first convicted murderer that I worked with. Of course, I'm pretty sure I've known murderers in my life, just based on me growing up in Chicago and different things, maybe. But this was the first one. So I was working at the jail, and I had to do the suicide watch rounds, and on my list, I started checking the list of people that I had to meet with to see what their charges were before I went in, just so I didn't get blindsided like I had in the past a little bit. So I was learning a little more as I moved forward in time working there. So the guy that I was checking on, he was on suicide watch and his charge was murder. So I was like, okay, how is this going to go? I had the officer with me. I don't know why in my brain, I talk about my brain a lot. In my thoughts, I think I envisioned a murderer, maybe a little darker than what I was about to be exposed to. I thought I was going to see, I don't know, someone that looked maybe mean and evil. I don't know. And I don't even know if you guys think that, but so we get to the cell and the officer opens the door. It's the cell door. It's pitch black. So mind you, when the officers go to the door, they typically bang on the door and they'll say, like, if I was there, they would say mental health, because that was my name, not my real name. They call you mental health. So they bang on the door and they're like, mental health, do you want to talk? Most of them will say no if given the option, but if they're on suicide watch, they just yell mental health and they make them get up. So when the cell door opened, it was, like I said, pitch black. And all I could see was this, it looked like a small framed body, like under a really yucky, like wool, horrible blanket. And, actually that was the suicide blanket. And so he was all like curled up in fetal position, and I was, like I said, I was honestly a little nervous what was going to happen. So he told the guy, come on, get up, like in a very firm voice. Mental health is here. You have to be reassessed or something to that effect, to see if he needed to stay on suicide watch. So the guy gets up. I still really can't see him other than a silhouette. And he was small. I'm about 5'5". He was probably about 5'6 or 7. He was not much bigger than me. And he was thin. So he was already like debunking my weird preconceived ideas of what I was walking into. And then he made the guy come out into the hall area or the walkway. And so then the lights were on. This guy was 19 years old, which I was not expecting it to be a kid. I mean, I was like looking at his, I didn't check his birth date when I looked for his charge. I couldn't believe how young he was. He looked so young that it was questionable if he even belonged in an adult jail. That's how young he looked. So immediately, you know, this maybe somewhat of a fear that I had dropped just because of his age, which is probably not a good idea, but it did. And so we talked. I did his suicide assessment. He was very suicidal still. He was newly in the jail a day or two. And I asked him, you know, are you feeling suicidal? He said yes. He didn't have a plan because there was no way to have a real plan in there at that time. And if there was, he wouldn't have told me probably. So I decided that, you know, I said, do you feel like, you know, talking about it a little bit, because in the jail, you're not doing therapy, so you're not allowed to, like, have a big sit-down session. But I felt like this just intuition to talk with him a little further instead of just saying, are you suicidal, yes or no, and then moving on. I didn't really like that style. So I said, you know, what's going on that's making you feel that way? And he said, well, I just found out that my best friend died. And I was like, oh, goodness, like, I'm really sorry. Obviously, that's horrible. And I said, is that's what's making you feel like you want to end your life? And he said, yeah, because it was my fault. And I was like, okay, what happened? So he proceeded to tell me that he and two friends, so there were three of them, they all went to a party one night. And they were drinking alcohol, and they were not using drugs yet. So they were drinking alcohol, partying, having a fun time. And on their way back, this is in Chicago, they were walking through, like, there's a lot of parks with walkways through them. So they were walking through a park, and one of the guys had heroin. And I'm assuming they were heroin users before that. So he said to the other three, or the other two, you know, like, come on, you guys, I don't know the right language, but, like, let's get high. So they sat down on the park bench, they all shot up, and then the one guy, the best friend, he started having seizures, and the other two, the inmate and the third guy, they got scared. So they tried to take him. There was a hospital very close to the edge of the walkway. And they tried to get him to move, but they couldn't get him to move because he was seizing. So they were very scared that they would get in trouble for using heroin. So they left him there. And they went, which obviously, as friendships go, that's not really very kind. And, but, you know, they were high and drunk and probably not making the best decisions. So they left. They went to another friend's party. They partied all night, stayed overnight at the party house. Next day, the inmate, he took the bus home. He got off the bus and he was walking down the street towards his house. And he saw a bunch of police cars. And then he saw his mom outside on the sidewalk talking to the officers, and he got scared that, you know, something happened to someone in his house. So he starts, you know, moving it up a little faster, trying to get there. He was very scared that something was wrong in his house. And so when he walked up, the officers verified his name, and his mom was crying, and they arrested him. And the charge was murder. And it was involuntary manslaughter. So he was like, what in the world? Like, how? I was at a party all night, you know, what are you talking about? So essentially, this guy, the friend that they left, somebody found him. I don't know the answer to how that came about. But someone found the friend, and they got him to the hospital, and he died of a heroin overdose or something related to the heroin. So apparently the laws are, and I didn't know this until this day, he and the other guy got charged with the murder, the involuntary, because they left him. So I guess there is a law that you cannot leave your friend or anyone. I still don't know the actual law, but I guess you're not allowed to leave someone that's, I don't know the law, but he got charged with that, and he was, you know, he was in jail. So when you're in jail, you're not convicted yet. You're charged with it. So he still had to go to court and all of that, but he was told that there was a very, very strong likelihood that he was going to do a pretty decent amount of time in prison for that. And, Yeah, his friend also got charged, but he didn't know. You know, it was new into the arrest when I met him. So that was kind of insane. That was not at all what I expected the first murderer to be that I worked with, to be a 19-year-old in on a charge that he didn't directly murder the person. And it just, I learned so much working in the jails about things you just can't even really fathom that people go to jail for. You know, I always had an idea, and I don't know even where I got it from. I mean, this was, let me think, 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. So all these police shows and all these forensic files, all these shows weren't out, and, you know, murder and all these crime things weren't common knowledge like they are now for people who love true crime. So this, you know, I was just really shocked by people who were in jail. I just always thought that it would be filled only with like hardcore murderers, like straight out of like break in your window and kill you in cold blood, and then like rapists that jump out of bushes. And I really learned working there just the huge range of people that go to jail. This is a little off topic, but I met people who were in jail for bounce checks. Like, pretty sure I've done that. I met people who were in jail for not paying child support. I mean, these days I think people know that, but I don't know. When you think of a jail and when you see the jail and when you work in the jail, at least in the beginning, the way it's set up, you just feel like everybody's like the worst human alive that's going to fill every cell. But that's actually not true at all. It's a small percentage that are like really hardcore criminals. People are in there. You know, I had a guy who was in there for stealing diapers for his baby, and they arrested him. I mean, he'll probably get out. But he went to jail, like stuff that's just stuff that a lot of people do, tons of DUIs. I mean, I'm sure, I know I'm not proud to say it, but when I was young, I feel like my whole friend group, like we all did. But again, it wasn't so popular not to. But, you know, walking through the jail, I would always just be astounded by how many people I knew that have done those same things, and even myself. And it just made me think, and it's kind of become like my mantra for that kind of work, which is we're all one little baby decision away from being in jail. And it's kind of terrifying because let me tell you, that is not the place you want to be. So I wanted to share that story. It doesn't have the big lightning ending that, you know, maybe a true crime lovers would like to hear, but that's the reality. And that's the kind of stuff I like to share with you guys, is a lot of my work, which is what I'll be talking about mostly, is a lot of it is things that they're not always what people imagine. And I learned that, you know, firsthand, and it was really eye-opening for me. So when you hear that someone's a murderer, I'm not saying, you know, to be warm and fuzzy, but there can be so many, many circumstances to why someone has certain charges, especially murder. There's a lot to it. So that's it, you guys. This was a shorter podcast. And if anyone has any ideas, please, I think there's a message button. I'm new to podcasting. Sometimes I feel like I'm new to the world, but I'm not. I'm trying to figure this out. If anyone has any ideas, I believe there's a message button that I put on for you guys to message me. And I think it's under like the title page or title portion of the podcast. Please feel free to message me any ideas that you have for the show name, that are respectful and something that I could actually use, because there's a lot of topics I want to cover from my work, in addition to, like I said, interviews and other things. And if you ever have ideas that you want me to cover, send in the messages. I would love to hear your feedback. I do see that my podcast, even though it's only a couple weeks old, it's growing really fast, and I appreciate you guys so much listening, because I really love making these, and I don't know why. But it's fun to share my information with people who are interested, because, you know, most of my family and friends don't want to hear about these things. So it's nice that there's an area or population of people that are interested in learning more about crime. And so that's it, you guys. Thank you again so much for your time, and I hope you have a good, safe night.